Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, and I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast presented by Agency Revolution, creators of Attract, a powerful marketing suite that enables you to spend less time on marketing and more time growing your business. Attract gives you the technology and the content you need to find your ideal prospect and turn them into your best customer. Folks, if you haven't seen it, visit agencyrevolution.com and request a demo today. I am excited to bring you into this conversation a little bit different. On one hand, I probably should be able to say a $100 million income agency, and that's all you'd need to know. But I'm going to tell you a little bit more besides that. My guest, Ed Page, is the president and chief operating officer of Relation Insurance, and I'm going to do something I don't normally do. I'm going to read a little bit of his bio slash resume because his background is so interesting and frankly different than a lot of insurance agents today. Ed brings nearly 25 years of experience driving performance improvement for companies, operations, finances, strategy, implementation, and organizational development to Relation, where he serves as president and chief operating officer. He leads the team's collaborative efforts, leads strategic planning, and drives Relation's industry leadership. So share with you a little bit about what he did, because like a lot of people, he didn't start out saying, hey, I want to be an insurance person. But he maybe fell into it a little bit differently. Prior to Relation, Ed's roles have included chief financial and advisor for several portfolio companies for Alpine Investors. He was the chief financial and operating officer of EDC, the second largest owner and operator of ATMs in the country, which was acquired by Cardtronics in 2011. Previously, he served as the CFO for Clark Sustainable Resource Development, an international underwater timber harvesting company backed by Barclays Capital and Goldman Sachs. He was the managing director of the Piedmont Group, a strategy, finance, and operations consulting firm. He was an associate partner of the Trium Group, a San Francisco-based boutique consulting firm, and he was a senior manager at Bain & Company, a global strategy consulting firm I think we're all familiar with. Ed served as the chief operating officer and co-founder of Care Assured, a healthcare technology company. His training, he had a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from MIT, a master's degree in electrical engineering from UC Berkeley, and a master's degree in business administration from Stanford University. So he comes to this conversation with a rich, deep, and well-regarded resume. And I think you'll discover very quickly why he's so well-regarded. So as you'll very quickly discover, this is a $100 million agency. They brought Ed in when sales had stalled at $70 million. That was only six years ago. So do the math on that. $70 million to $100 million in 6 years. We talk about, dive right into Ed's perception of what that agency has done to grow and thrive as they have. And I think some of the answers are going to be really surprising. Spoiler alert, we do talk a lot about culture because in spite of the fact that he's an MIT-trained engineer and an MBA and a former CFO, he really said it's about the who. So again, without much further ado, the only last thing I want to say is, hey, folks, let's connect. If we're not connected, next time you're in front of your computer, think of me. Connect with me on LinkedIn, because if you do, I'll make sure you miss nothing of kind of the really interesting stuff that's happening now and the interesting stuff that I am working on. Next time you're on your phone, Hey, follow me on Instagram, Michael Jans. Let's be friends. So now, without further ado, really is a great privilege to bring you into this conversation with Ed Page. Ed Page, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's a thrill to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's terrific. So we are going to dive into a topic that I think is useful for every single listener, every single agency principal, and it's something that everybody can employ kind of doesn't cost much money. Am I right, Ed?
That's right. I mean, it's one of those great things that I kind of like to think about it, like, what if ice cream were actually good for you?
Ah, right? Maybe you're funny.
Made you better looking and lose weight. I mean, we really focus on culture, and it doesn't really cost that much to do it, but the benefits are just incredible. So it's a great kind of win-win.
What, ice cream's not good for you? All right.
I'll let you find that out for yourself.
All righty. So before we do, and I know that you're going to be delivering some very practical insights and suggestions. Before we do, if you wouldn't mind, a quick thumbnail on Ed Page.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. So I'm not your typical insurance person, or maybe I am because I kind of stumbled my way into insurance, but I haven't had a long history with it. I was originally an engineer by training, and an electrical engineer. Actually, had two electrical engineering degrees. Kind of hard to believe, because I'm not that good at it. And I worked at that for a little bit. Then went off to business school, then went into strategy consulting with Bain & Company for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Did a lot of high tech strategy work.
Right on. By the way, congratulations! Bain has been extremely influential on my own thinking and my career. So, and I know you were in a different division, but they have a high bar for advisors who work for them. So, congratulations.
Well, thank you. It was a fantastic place. It really helped me in a host of ways. I think I probably developed more as a leader and a manager in those 5 years than at any point in my career.
Uh-huh.
So I have nothing but the best things to say about them.
And then after Bain?
Then after that, I actually started a company with a business school classmate of mine. We ran that for a couple years. And this is kind of back in the 1999 time frame, so it was an internet-based.
Okay, things were rocking and rolling then. Yes,
things were rocking and rolling until they weren't.
Yeah.
So in around 2000, things started going the other direction, as many of you may remember. But we actually had built a decent company. We're actually able to sell it, which was a remarkable achievement at that point in time.
Congratulations!
So it was a good result for us. Not a fantastic thing. I didn't turn into a internet billionaire like some of the folks these days, so I still had to work. And so I went back to my roots in consulting, and then over the next few years, kind of just kept on getting pulled back into more and more of an operating role. And probably about 15 years ago or so, I just kind of permanently got pulled in operating roles, really helping private equity-backed companies run mm-hmm. some of the things that they've bought. And that's what I've been doing for a good little while.
Okay. And as I recall from previous conversations, Ed, it was perhaps your relationship with one of the private equity firms that then introduced you to the agency that you are a part of.
That's correct. So I had been with a company called EDB, which was an ATM company. They were the second mm-hmm. largest owner and operator of ATMs, which mm-hmm. doesn't have anything to do with insurance. But when we sold that company, we looked at selling both to other people in the industry and private equity firms. And one of the private equity firms that we met was Parthenon Capital. And Parthenon Capital was the owner of Relation up until just a couple of months ago. And after we sold EDC, I got a call from them asking would I be interested in coming to help run Relation.
Right.
And at the time, the company was called Ascension, but now Relation.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of funny story was, I was really just about to accept another job. I'd had a mentor for a long time that was trying to pull me into one of the companies he was chairman of. And then I was about to go on vacation to Costa Rica, so I got this call, met with one of the partners from Parthenon on Friday. I had a nice conversation. I said, hey, I'm about to accept this other job. About to go to Costa Rica tomorrow with my girlfriend, so I don't think this is really going to work out. So he said, no, please you know, come meet our CEO. He's a really good guy. We'd love to talk to you. So we got together really early the next day, Saturday, for breakfast before I went on my flight. Had a nice breakfast with Joe, and I still remember sitting down with him. If you ever meet Joe, he's just a fundamentally good human being. You can tell it in the very first interaction you have with him that he's a good person, which is very important to, very, very important to me. I'm just a high-quality individual. Liked him instantly, and, you know, was a little intrigued, but I didn't think anything would come of it. So went on my vacation, and on the Wednesday, I found I had an email offer to come join the company. That was kind of the start, and then I had a tough decision to make. I had on the one hand someone I had known and been a mentor for a long time and thought highly of, and then I had Joe and this other company that I didn't know as well, but I could tell Joe was what I call a great who, because I believe that job opportunities and career opportunities, you should think about the who much more than the what, and I knew that Joe was a great who, and ultimately that's what I decided to do, and he's been a fantastic partner, and we've had a great run and done some really cool things, and I'm absolutely sure I made the right decision, and I'm thrilled with what we've done.
Well, some good things are happening, obviously, at the agency. So before we dive into the scheduled topic of conversation, sure. I want to ask you a little bit about the agency because it's somewhat unusual. Maybe just a little bit of background, because you guys have seen some tremendous growth, I think the operation might be just a little bit different than the average, certainly than the average Main Street agency. So tell us a little bit about Relation.
Yeah, sure. So we're about $100 million in revenues, which is a good bit of growth from the time I started. I think we're around $70 million.
And that was in how many years?
And that was 2013, so okay. About 6 years.
Okay.
And it's a combination of organic growth and inorganic growth. I mean, it's hard to grow that rapidly with purely organic growth, obviously.
Okay.
But when I joined and when Joe joined, company had negative organic growth, which is not a good story.
Right.
but one of our key focuses was turning that around. So again, we'll talk about culture and how that impacts a lot of things. But a lot of that was around creating a sales culture, right? How do you get the organization to be focused on sales and making that a key priority? And now we've driven some nice organic growth. And in addition, we've driven some nice inorganic growth as well with a number of acquisitions. And we'll talk about where we're going, what the plan is to really accelerate on both fronts, for both organic and inorganic. And we really want to triple the size of the company over the next 3 to 5 years. And we've made a number of steps to do that, including hiring a great head of M&A, a guy named Tim Hall from Waller Helms, just a couple months ago. So we're really excited about the path we're going down.
So you are on an aggressive M&A path, and you're in a lot of states. I won't ask you to name them all, but really a lot of the big states, maybe a little bit less on the East Coast than on the West Coast. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Well, so our headquarters is on the West Coast, and our biggest business unit is a business called Pan American, which does a lot of agriculture workers' comp business here in California and Arizona.
Right.
So that's our biggest business unit. We also have an education business out here as well. So we like to focus on really kind of more specialty niche businesses than your typical Main Street business.
Uh-huh.
We kind of find that through our portfolio. And then on the East Coast, we have some transportation, municipal businesses as well. We're probably 60% West Coast, 40% East Coast, but we're trying to grow everywhere.
Okay, got it. All right. So typically in this podcast series, the kind of things that I would be diving into would be what were the strategies and tactics you used behind your organic growth. But just because your agency does such a stellar job with this, and I know that it's an area of focus for you, I really wanted to focus on that other thing, culture. Okay.
Yep.
Absolutely. You and I have talked about that. I really want to be clear that, you know, of course, I mean, a lot of people would tend to think, you know, Michael Jans is a strategy guy. And I think to some extent with your background, you would say, Ed, that you're probably, to a large extent, you're a strategy guy. You've counseled and advised people on strategy. You've built companies with, the application and execution of sound strategy. But culture, obviously, is key. How do you think, I'm going to ask you this question just to sort of start things out. How do those things, those two business forces relate to each other?
Well, so I guess I think about it like this. So I think about any business there. You think about people, process, and technology as kind of the cornerstone of an enterprise.
Right on.
And so when you think about it like that, there's one of those three things that's more important than the other two, right?
So, yeah. Okay.
If you have great people can overcome a poor process and poor technology. Right, but a great technology can't overcome poor people and poor process, and same thing with poor process. So it's really the people that matter most of all. Now, in the long term, you have to have all three. And really, what we try and focus on is one: let's have great people, which is very much tied to having a great culture, because great people only really want to work in a great culture. That's how it works. And then, what if you can also tie that to also great technology and great process? Wow. Then you really have something.
Okay.
That's how we think about it in terms of a high-level strategy and how all those things come together.
So what is it about relations culture that you think sets it apart from the industry as a whole?
Yeah, so, it's remarkable. So in this industry, more so than most, all industries are really people-driven, but this is more so than most. Because it's rare to see an industry where the people really, frankly, control so much of the revenue. And if they leave, they can walk out the door with it, right? So you really have to make it such a place that they don't want to do that. And for us here in California, where there are very employee-friendly labor laws,
right.
You can't really tie people down. You have to make it such that they want to be here because they can walk across the street at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So we really focus on making it a great place to work. And the reality is it's remarkable to me when I look at some of the other players in this industry. I really say it's like what some of our employees who come from other places say, when I was someplace else, it felt like I was just in a graveyard for my enthusiasm and engagement. That's where all my idealism and fun went to die, right?
Right, right.
And so we just try and be the opposite of that, right? And really focus on what are the things that really make people excited. And a lot of that has to do with believing in that they're being a part of something that's really great. So we think about creating an entity that's going to thrive for 100-plus years, not just something where we're buying assets, and then we're going to flip it and sell it. That's not how we think about things. We think about creating a great place to work that's going to be around for a long period of time, and that's what really drives our actions, and I think it helps separate us from a lot of the other folks that are out there.
All right, so somebody could look at your agency and say, all right, in the last 6 years, you've added an average of $5 million in revenue every single year. And it would be, I think it would be easy for somebody to say, what was your marketing strategy, right? How much of it was inorganic growth and acquisition? And so, the question that I'm curious about is, how do you assess the contribution that culture made to the success? Other than good, because this is one of the challenges of culture is that, first of all, culture, a good culture does feel good. But how do you like metric it so that you know it's not just good feelings?
Yeah, great question. So, one, we can look at our financial results, right? So we track employee surveys to really see how we're doing, and we look at the results of that, and we can show you how our employee surveys have increased over time, and we can also show you how our finances have increased
okay.
over time. We think those two things are correlated.
All right.
So I can be more specific about that. And so if you think about it from both an organic side and an inorganic side, let's go with the inorganic side first. So in the inorganic side, it's still a competition where you're competing against other people out there to buy agencies. That's
right.
how it works.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You're the only
yeah.
buyer out there.
Right.
Right. So people have choices, and the market prices tend to be roughly the same. So people really want to go someplace where they feel like they can really live up to their true potential. So that's how we've been able to win in a lot of ways, and just setting up an environment where people get to know us, get to see what we're about, see if their culture can match with ours, believe they can thrive and grow, and then they want to come to us. And so that's a really powerful part of what's driven our inorganic growth. But the same thing on the organic side as well, in that we've been able to recruit more and more producers to come here because, frankly, they think it's a better place to work than they were beforehand. And it's not about pay. You know, It's not about resources. And we pay competitively, and we've got all the resources. It really is about, you know, the excitement of being in a place where people are engaged and turned on about what they're doing.
Okay, so I get that. All right, I see that. So in cases where the playing field is relatively level, like you've got two or more other firms that are competing to purchase an agency, or you've got two or more firms that are competing to hire a producer, in some cases you win, and it's not because you're paying more.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. I mean, we win because we like to think, you know, it's a better place to work, and that's what we hear from the, you know, we've done several deals. Like one of the deals we did in the last year, the principal was like, you're the only people that I want to sell to. Because I've talked to the other guys that are out there, and I was like, I just, you know, their culture is not a fit for me, right? It's not the kind of place I want to be. I like what you guys are doing. I like the growth prospect that you have. And I like how you got a flat organizational structure that I really feel like I can thrive in.
Okay.
And so that's winning its deals.
All right. So I have a question for you. Do you think that paradigm, a culture that allows you to, let's say, purchase an agency at the same price, you know, purchase an agency in a competitive environment without paying more, do you think then that same esprit de corps, that culture then also allows the agency to do, you know, kind of the opposite, sell insurance without being the cheapest?
I do. And so when we don't focus on price, when we're focused on our clients, we focus on value proposition, right?
Right.
And so part of the value proposition is having better services, better service, customer service, client service than other folks. And how do you get that? Again, it goes back to people that are engaged and excited by what they do. I'm sure you've had experiences in you know aspects of your life when you've gotten great customer service, and you've had some when you've gotten bad. What's generally the difference for that? It's the person that's providing the service. And do they care about what they're doing? Do they care about their clients? Do they care about the company? And the answer is yes. You're going to get a much better result than somebody who doesn't. So for us, it's a differential competitive advantage. And as a result, we've got one of the best retention rates you'll see in the industry at almost 93% retention rate. That's one of the best you could find.
Okay. So your customer retention is 99%. Customer retention is 93%?
Yep.
Okay, good. All right. That's excellent. And presumably, we didn't talk much about this. Most of that presumably is commercial lines business?
Yeah, most of it is commercial lines. So we have a heavy P&C practice, employee benefits as well. A little bit of personal lines, probably 10% about 8%.
8%.
Personal lines, but primarily on the commercial side.
Okay, so we're not selling on price, and we've got a 93% retention. So far, I like what I'm hearing. In a minute, I'm going to ask you like some of the specifics, you know, of what you actually do. Like, you know, how do we know culture is real? But I'm going to reference something you mentioned a moment ago. You said that you do some kind of an employee survey to kind of gauge, how the health of the culture, shall we say. Is there a specific tool that you use, and is it one that you necessarily recommend, or, you know, if you don't mind, share a little bit about that process?
Yeah, sure. So we're actually looking at changing it, actually, but we've done it for a long time, and so we actually ask a series of the same 12 questions every quarter. And there is a series of questions that I believe it came from Gallup. I have to double check that.
Mm-hmm.
That really measures the engagement of a workforce and how much do they feel connected to their place of work. So they did a whole bunch of research on it, and so we've tracked it for a long period of time and can look and see over time, you know, how we're doing. And you know, over time, it's consistently been increasing, which is great. We also asked the classic, net promoter score,
Net
promoter question, which is, you know, would you recommend Relation as a place to work, you know, to a friend or family member, and track that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, it's a key thing for us to dive in on and see how we're doing. And we also have, get open-ended answers as well.
Got it.
So we go through it as a manager team every quarter. And where we're seeing, you know, survey results not as well as we like, we dive in to figure out what's going on, and it's driven differential action in certain cases.
Okay, so clearly things are moving in the right direction. Now it's time for me to ask you, what do you do to create the culture that you're describing?
Yeah, great question. So we actually wrote an article in the American Management Association. It's really got kind of 10 steps around it. So I'm not going to go through all 10, but it's a great article. So you know, feel free to check that out. But there's a number of general things, and I'll just give a couple of specific examples. So I think the first and most important thing is just walking the walk. And by that, I mean, you know, leaders set the tone for any organization. And so people see everything you do. They see if you come in early. They see if you leave late. They see how you treat people. Just making sure that you are always acting in a way that is consistent with the values and culture that you want to promote is the most important thing. And so that's what we do. So an example for what we do here at Relation. So we really value the people that we have and some of the customer service folks that we have, or really all the folks.
Yeah.
And so Joe, who's our CEO, I'm the president and COO, for every employee that has a five-year anniversary, we write a handwritten note and give them a small gift, and you know, tell them you know, thank you for what they've done and so forth. And it's sometimes it's painful to do because we have 500 employees, so we have to write out a lot of notes. and when you're writing them out, when my assistant brings them in and brings them the stacks, like, oh wow, that's a lot of notes. So it can be painful at times. But about a week after you send them out, you get all these positive emails and calls back, and it just makes it worth it tenfold over. And I think people really appreciate, you know, being recognized.
Yeah.
So that's one of the small things that we do in order to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just one other example is, you know, I have an assistant, but I do my own expenses. And the reason why I do my own expenses, because I could have her do them, but I ask everybody else to use the expense management system, so I want to do it too. And make sure to feel the same pain that they feel, or hopefully not too much pain, and see what that's all about. So I think just being walking the walk and demonstrating that you are embodying the cultures you espouse, I think that's really important.
Got it. All right. Now, you've got employees all over the United States. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to break this down. Number one, are there things that happen locally that you know, are kind of intended to build to build the team and the esprit de corps of that team? And then the other question is, I'm curious, how do you deal with building a single culture when you've got people spread out all over?
Yeah, great question. So a couple things. So one, we definitely do things on a local level, and I'll come back to that. But one of the things that we've done that's been really powerful for us is we have a monthly all-colleague call. And in that monthly all-colleague call, we do something that's a little bit unusual. We actually walk through the financials of the company and talk about how the overall company is doing. So, you know, at times, particularly when we first joined, the financials weren't so great.
Not right.
A great story.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, you know, but letting people know, hey, here's what's going on. Here's some of the challenges we're having. Here's how we're fixing it. Makes people feel really connected to things. And so then when results started getting better, obviously it's a much better story to tell. But treating people like adults, letting them know what's going on, and just being communicating everything that's happening makes a big difference. And then we also do a lot of things to try and build, you know, a sense of culture and get people connected to one another as well. Just sharing people's stories in terms of great customer service, sharing babies that have been born or weddings that have happened, and just building a sense of connection across the company has really, really been helpful.
Got it. All right. Now, I don't know if there's a need in your organizational structure for somebody in Florida to be talking to somebody in Colorado or what have you. I mean, they may just function, you know, perfectly, you know, in kind of an isolated format. But do you use any collaboration technology tools to facilitate communication at a distance?
Well, you know, so we have got some of the chat services, like we have Skype for Business and Link and those types of things. Mm-hmm. But what we really find that drives that, it's just really just letting people get to know one another. So, you know, it's a thing that if you can create a type of environment where people can just interact. So we do a number of things to facilitate for happening. So, for example, we have a national sales meeting where we get all our salespeople together. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of it, part of it is let's get them trained on certain things. But the other part of it is we just want them to socialize and get to know one another. Because if you think about, for example, driving cross-selling. So driving cross-selling, you can set up a program to do that and some way to try and force it to happen.
Uh-huh.
But at the end of the day, the producer has to feel as if their counterpoint is someone they can trust with his or her clients.
Yeah.
And that really only comes from building a personal relationship. And so we actually spend a lot of time when we have our national sales meetings doing, you know, kind of team building things so we can break down those barriers and get people to really know each other. And it's actually been really cool on that. Now when we do events, like when we have our top performers club, we'll have producers from different parts of the country who don't really work together at all go in early and rent a house together and vacation together, which is really cool.
Yeah. Okay. So when presumably you are always in a hiring mode. You've got 500 people?
About
500 people, and you are on a fast growth track. So presumably, you're probably always hiring. We've touched on it a little bit, but what do you think are the key elements to attracting prospective employees when they have obviously other options?
Yeah. So great employees want to work with other great employees, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the number one way we get employees is our employees saying, hey, that guy or that gal is a great, great person. You should talk to them. And then bringing them in and letting them get a taste of the culture, that's what really wins for us. And when we look at a lot of our most successful hires and even a lot of the most successful agencies that we bought, it's been because someone who works here,
uh-huh,
knows us, likes it, recommends us, and pulls that person in. So
got it.
That's the way to do it.
Okay.
And by the way, if you know of any good people that we should be hiring, send them our way, because we are always looking for great people.
Okay. Well, it wouldn't surprise me if you got a phone call or two from maybe an agency principal who'd like to be part of that culture.
We would love to hear from you. It's a great place. Love to talk to you about it.
All right. So now I want to ask kind of a very specific question. So you've built a culture. And
yeah.
I don't know how you describe it, but presumably it's relatively high energy and it's cohesive and there's a high level of trust and good communication, things like that, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, there's another element that I want to ask about, and you and I touched on this in earlier conversations, that you also built, for want of a better word, a sales culture, right?
Yes.
So if you would, I want to talk about that part of it or ask you about that part of it. So I think, generally we think of, culture as being kind of those a little bit hard to see things, but we hear them in the conversation and we know that it's there, right? It's the way people treat each other, the way people feel about their work, the energy that they bring to it. It has to do with them not just bringing their body to work, but bringing their heart and their mind to work and all that jazz. I think business analysts will often tell us that, if we have a culture without strategy, then we feel good, but we don't get anything done and we don't necessarily move in the right direction. So I know you have a sales culture. How did you introduce that? And I'm kind of curious, did you run into any resistance from legacy employees?
Oh, absolutely. So, one of the things, the first things that you need to do is you need to have some type of sales management system, some type of CRM. So in our case, we originally used Salesforce.com to be our pipeline management system.
Mm-hmm.
And there was tremendous resistance to it. There just was, because people didn't see the value in it, didn't want to do it. And so we had to work really over the course of years to get people to do that. And we really believe in a sales process where you're really focusing on, getting prospects, moving them into a pipeline, all the elements of a overall sales process. And you have to manage that in order to drive sales results. Superior sales organizations, that's what they have. So part of it is having that process and getting people to buy into it. But that's only one piece of it. The other piece is the social studies of it. And so we actually did a lot of things, because if you notice, what really drives salespeople's behavior, it's not so much the money they make, which is important.
Mm-hmm.
What it really is that them being able to look good in front of their peers and not be embarrassed in front of their peers. So sales contest, for example, all the salespeople, they want to be the number one guy or gal, right?
So yeah.
They're really focused on that. The other thing that we did that was really, I think, helpful is we actually got the whole company involved in the sales process. So I'll give you an example. We did a thing called the Fantasy Producer League, where we actually tracked the sales and pipeline increase of all the different producers, had people put them into groups just like kind of like they do in fantasy football, and had prizes that would go out, not to the producers, but to the support staff. So you get the dynamic of the support staff or producers saying, hey, I put you in my Fantasy Producer League. You're not producing. Get on it so I can get my money, right?
You're funny.
And so
okay.
It was fun. It was powerful. Got everybody involved in the sales process and really did a lot to help drive that sales culture.
That's funny. That reminds me of a game that we played a long time ago. We were much smaller back in the day, but we would do horse races. And so every sales rep would create a little horse, and we'd put the big, like a racetrack in the kitchen, you know, on a big flip chart, and then as they made sales, they would make, you know, they would move their horse around, and team members would bet on who was going to win that race, and they would be the ones who would get a prize. Of course, you know, the winner would, but the whole team would. So boom, everybody was watching sales and caring about it.
Yeah exactly. Well, you know, one of the subtle challenges that we have in this industry is that, frankly, you know, the producers and salespeople, they make, frankly, a lot of money, right? And we're always trying to, you know, reward them and give them contests and mm-hmm. so forth. And for the service people, it's like, well, we just sold this big case. Now all I get is a lot of extra work.
Right.
So, trying to find ways. So it's like, hey, no, this is actually beneficial to you and reward them is important.
Yeah.
One of the other things that we've done is we created a thing which we call Service Team Appreciation Week. And what that is, we literally spend a full week, and it wasn't my idea or Joe's idea. It was literally the service team's idea to come up with this, and we were highly supportive of it. And we spend the whole week just saying thank you. And so it starts off with us doing all colleague calls saying thank you, and then we've got massages, we have breakfast, we have lunches, we have raffles. And it's just the whole thing. Like, for 1 week out of the year, we just want to say to the service team how much we appreciate you and thank you for all you do. And it's just been a huge hit, and it's one of my favorite times of year, because I get to go around to the different offices and say thank you, and I just tell you the positive positivity I get back is it's tenfold over.
All right. So going forward, do you have any concerns about maintaining the attention on culture in the agency, or what are you doing to make sure that it remains a high priority?
Yeah, well, it'll always remain a high priority for us. I mean, we just think it's the key to success, and it's a key to success to where we've gotten. It's going to be a key to success in the future. But the challenge is, like, as we grow, you know, how do you keep that intact, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
right.
For us, it's been really focusing on the next level of leaders, you know, beneath, you know, Joe and I. We've got a fantastic team of folks that, you know, that have come up in the same culture. We think we picked the right people that are high integrity,
uh-huh.
you know, transparent, know how to respect people and treat people with care. And so as a result, you know, we're able to get more and more leverage out of them to build a culture with more and more people. That's how we do it. And the other piece of it is, I'll be careful. I don't know how if this is PG or not, but we have a no a-hole policy.
Uh-huh. Like, okay.
If you are one of those, you just can't be here.
You just right? ain't gonna. Right. Okay.
It doesn't matter who you are.
Uh-huh.
And sticking to that and having that be the case, you know, keeps the culture in a really positive way.
And I'm really asking this question rhetorically, but that what you just said, that policy would apply to the highest producing producer you got, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's where the rubber hits the road.
That's where the rubber hits the road. I mean, that's always a challenge for any organization. Like, you're thinking sports, right? So if you've got the guy or gal who's like, you know, the MVP, but just doesn't know how to play on the team and is, you know, is an a-hole. You know, my view is, like, you have to get rid of that person.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's painful, But over the long term, it's going to be, that's how you create a great team and a great culture. But it's painful in the moment when you do it.
All right. Ed, there may be more than one reason why somebody would want to reach out to you. If our listener does want to make contact with you or find out more about Relation, what do you suggest? How should they do that?
Well, feel free to send me an email. It's ed.page@relationinsurance.com. I'd love to hear from you. As you can probably tell, love talking about the company and what we're doing. I'm absolutely thrilled about where we're at. I frankly view this as my life's work, as creating a great place to work. We're just having a lot of fun. So happy to talk about that until I'm blue in the face.
All right. Ed, I'm energized talking to you. So I'm sure that that your agency really benefits from your presence. So I really, really thank you for spending a little bit of time with us today.
Sure. Well, hey, it's been a lot of fun. I appreciate the insightful questions. And I love talking about what we're doing. I could do it all day.
Right on. Good to have you. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.